This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Hour two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Condolences to Mexico as their 2022 World Cup has been, it's seen its last moments. They did beat Saudi Arabia, the final score 2-1, and needed a goal there to win on tiebreakers late, and they just could not get that done. So they are done, and Poland and Argentina are through. So congratulations to fans of Leo Messi as they have advanced in his dream of glory for the country, as he's had so much glory for club is still alive. Here's Zach Wolchuk with some fun with NFL audio.
Mike McDaniel of the Miami Dolphins, he might be the best coach in the NFL in terms of pressers and just audio gold.
He gets it.
He does, man.
In this time and age, he does get it.
We've got the treasure that is Mike Leach in college football, and we love playing audio from him. But, oh my goodness, Mike McDaniel is really giving us a treat, and we've got some audio from him. Now, we did just get this hot off the press, that the Dolphins and Chargers game, Sunday Night Football, has now got that flexed for Week 14. So we're going to get Herbert and Tua. Week 14. Now, this is assuming, Eric, that Tua does make it out alive, which you're thinking he might not against the Niners.
I am genuinely concerned for the health of Tua going into San Francisco without both of his tackles and the Niners front seven that includes a Bosa brother.
Ugh.
It's a very, very frightening time. Watching him get split in half by former Cowboy Malik Collins when the Dolphins played the Texans on Sunday was scary for everybody. So, I'm a bit concerned there. There's no question about it. And I believe it was the game that got flexed out was Mahomes versus Russell Wilson.
Yes.
America does not want to watch Denver anymore.
Not anymore.
And honestly, I don't know if that's better news for football fans because we don't want to have to sit through another Denver Broncos primetime game, or if that's like better news for Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson, that they can go get buried somewhere, you know, in the midst of an NFL slate and not have to be the primetime game where Hackett's, of course, going to botch some clock management, Russell Wilson's not going to throw for any touchdowns, and they're going to score like 9 points.
Right. I think it's a brilliant
thing.
It's
a win for everybody involved.
That we're not having to deal with the Broncos. By the way, before we dive into this McDaniel audio, the rumor is from Peter King that Nathaniel Hackett's going to get fired at the end of this year. He's going to be one and done. He's like, I don't think.
Maybe before the year's over.
Yeah, maybe. He said, I think I will not be surprised if Nathaniel Hackett makes it to the end of this season as Denver coach, but I will be extremely surprised if he isn't one and done. So Nathaniel Hackett's days are numbered.
How about that?
And again,
they could add Dan Quinn.
Well, that's my fear, Brian. And we've talked about this.
They just circle back on Quinn.
Dan Quinn, that
was his job.
Stay the hell away from our guy.
That was his job.
You had your shot and you blew it. And if you're Dan, you just stay there coaching Micah Parsons, who just said to the media, by the way, that he's got 25 sacks in 27 career games. He said he tries 8 different pass rush moves early in a game. And then he just goes back and forth with what's working throughout the rest of the game.
Yeah, he's a stud.
Got a rookie tackle here, you know.
Well, he's going to just slice and dice that dude up. I'd hate to be him.
Especially with the cement-footed
old
Matt Ryan in the pocket. That's going to be problematic.
Updated takes, we're not firing McCarthy to keep Quinn at this point, are we? There's no way the Cowboys do it.
Maybe you
would want to personally, but I can't see that happening.
I mean, you're looking at making the postseason for the first time in back-to-back years since 06-07.
Yeah.
Only if
unless it's just a complete disaster in your first playoff game.
Yes. If you have an offensive collapse of sorts at the end of this regular season or in game one of the playoffs, like I wouldn't rule anything out, but we're certainly trending in the right direction for McCarthy to run it back here. And if you're Dan Quinn, the Broncos is not a good job. Russell Wilson is a disaster.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the single worst contract in sports.
Well, and
why would you want to go there?
And Nathaniel Hackett said today.
But you got one of the best defenses
in
the league.
You do.
But that doesn't carry over very often. You have a great defense 1 year, next thing you know, maybe.
I mean,
not.
They got a lot of young players on that defense. To me, I mean, I think Hackett is such a problem with the offense. And maybe it's because of Russ. But man, you go in there and he won at Seattle late in his career, right? I mean, they won games playing around him, right? Don't you think like you could do the same thing? If
it was the hand injury last year that was really the turning point, but up until then.
You're Dan Quinn, you're thinking like, man, I got a pretty damn good defense there. Okay, I can, you know, if I could just kind of hire a coordinator or somebody that could
get the
help.
Run game going. They need to lose Javonte Williams.
You have to decide if you think Russell Wilson's washed up, and he might be. You know, he needed evasiveness and cover one to excel passing.
Yeah.
Now he can't escape, and teams are playing shell coverage on him.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I kind of look
and
at it.
Nobody seems to like him.
That's a big issue.
But see, but look what's going on. Like, okay, look what the coaching, just hiring a defensive coach like in Chicago. And I know it hasn't translated to wins, but how much better is Justin Fields? We're not talking about Justin Fields as a bust anymore, are we? We're kind of like, oh, man, this guy is actually
showing something.
So you think Quinn would want to go?
Oh, I would. And I'm saying this for this reason alone. And, you know, people could come after me if all they want.
Oh, I'm going to come after you.
It's only 32 of these.
Yeah.
It's only 32 of these.
Fair point.
You know, and Dan Quinn was a...
Not going to come after you.
It's a winning organization in Denver.
Dan Quinn...
I'm going to crawfish.
Dan Quinn was a guy that... And Tom Dimitroff, who used to be the general manager there, was telling me about this. He goes, We are a bad half away from having all employed there because of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He goes, we win that game, we're all getting contract extensions, we're all staying, everything's hunky-dory.
Mm-hmm.
That there's only 32 of these jobs. And,
sure.
And Dan Quinn's been, he's been to the summit. You know, he has. He's seen it. He's been to the top of this thing, you know, as a head coach, and you're kind of like, okay, yeah, I sure like Dallas, and I sure like Micah Parsons. He's got some really good young defensive players there at Denver if he was to leave, too.
Patrick Surtain
is just as, yeah. I mean, so, I you know, now you don't have draft picks. But the one thing that we've seen from Dan Quinn is he could go in there and kind of help. Now, at Atlanta, maybe that was a different story. Maybe Tommy Dimitroff and those guys didn't help him enough. Dallas with, you know, but he seems to have a pretty good eye for players.
Let me say just one quick thing as far as how this Cowboys season could end. I'm fascinated by week 16, 17, 18. And how quickly we change from after a win and after a loss. Mm-hmm. After a loss, nothing is right. If you go Eagles, Titans, Commanders, and lose two out of the three, if your offense is struggling to score 20 points against good defenses, everything could be different by the time we get to mid-January.
They're tough games. You know, the Commanders game, I think that they should win, because especially if it's Heinicke, they seem to own that guy.
That
but
game can mean a lot for the Commanders.
I mean, it could mean a lot for them.
It could mean, okay.
But Eagles, Titans, those are games those are not easy.
You lose the Philadelphia game, you're guaranteed, you're looking at the fifth seed right now. Right, you're doing everything you can to hang in there 100%. And be the fifth seat.
Right. Yep. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Also, come hang out with us at Boomer Jacks in Arlington, the Highlands location off I-20, just east of 360, noon to 4.
We'll talk
on
about
Saturday.
These things.
Going to be fantastic.
I think the text makes a good point. Quinn can smell a Super Bowl in Dallas, and he might not sniff one anywhere else. Speaking of Week 16, 17, 18, if Dak goes out there and averages 32 points per game in that, and your defense has got the run game figured out, if you're Dan Quinn, you got to be thinking really, really positively about next year and the year after that, with Parsons being so young and Diggs being so young. You know, it might be so good that even if the Cowboys don't even get to the conference championship game, you'd be like, I can't leave this.
Yeah.
This is special what's going on, because those are going to be tough tests at the end of the year.
So NFL Films gave us some glorious Mike McDaniel audio. Here is Mike McDaniel trolling his own quarterback, Tua. And who does he think the best team in the SEC is?
Yeah, Georgia is definitely the best SEC school, without a shadow of a doubt. Got it. I'm so glad Tua can't hear me.
Is that him on the sidelines? Like
he was walking right by him.
Tua is warming up, and he's standing literally right next to Tua, and he's just talking into the headset.
Yeah. Huh. That's fantastic.
Staring at him while Tua does his warm-up throws.
Man.
It's amazing. Now, here he's talking with Tua about watching his high school film and what he thought about Tua's technique.
I woke up like at 3, and I couldn't go back to sleep. So I was thinking about when you randomly hit me up that you're YouTubing me.
Yeah.
And so then I YouTubed you and heard and saw this Trent Dilfer thing showing all this high school from you.
Trent.
And bro, your technique was trash. You know what I mean? Thank God for Bev.
What are you talking about? No rhythm, no timing? That what you're talking about?
It was cool, though, because you could see little elements of, like, your swag, But you were stressed out.
Woo!
Dude, like, woo! That's during the game. Well, I guess that's when you're up 30-0 over the Texans in the third quarter. I guess you can have those kind of sidebar in-game sideline conversations. But I believe those kinds of conversations between a head coach and a quarterback are the first of its kind in the NFL. This is a different kind of dude.
Absolutely.
This is the most unique personality to ever set foot on an NFL sideline as a head coach, because these guys are perpetual, stubborn, bleep hole, up by a million, doesn't matter, locked in. They can't like color outside the lines for a second, it like in the game. And that's funny, man.
No, Mike McDaniel has the personality. Like, this is all during the game, and then we played the audio a couple weeks ago when they're playing Justin Fields, and he just asks him, hey, will you stop running? Just stop doing that. So this is also during the game. One of their running backs, I don't think it was Jeff Wilson, it was somebody else, misses a tackle. He breaks a tackle, and this is what he says to his running back afterwards.
The fullback.
It was the fullback. Okay, great. This is what he says to him.
Engel.
Hey, that was cool what you did when that first guy tried to tackle you and then you didn't let him tackle you. Yeah, that was sick.
It was like a broken tackle.
How high is this guy, dude?
That was sick.
Well, he that was a thing. Like, when he was the play caller, I remember in lead up to the San Francisco and Cowboys playoff game last year, we had some Niners people on, and McDaniel had started to get the reputation of being funny guy at the microphone when it comes to press conferences, though not being a head coach, just being the OC in San Francisco. But the guys from San Francisco that we had on, and we asked about him, like, oh yeah, it's commonly known, this is a guy who loves his Chiba.
Yeah,
okay. Like, for sure.
Like, there was rumors.
Oh, he's not hiding from it.
I don't think so.
He's not hiding from it. There were rumors going around like he's not going to end up being the head coach of a team that doesn't have legalized marijuana. Now, I don't think Miami does. So that
ended up being Miami,
false.
Though,
but it was basically flawless. Legal when I was there.
Yeah.
There was like a weed food truck driving around.
Exactly.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Weed flatbread.
Was that Big Worm?
Yeah,
it's Big Worm, bro.
You know, I stopped and talked to him. Actually, I was like, that's crazy. I didn't see you guys had legalized recreationally. And he's like,
it's Miami, bro.
We haven't. But what do you need? I was like, I don't need anything, man. But I was just wondering.
I need directions.
Just admiring, you know, just looking and gazing.
It's interesting.
Here's McDaniel. Now, he was with San Francisco last year, of course, and him and Kyle Shanahan have grown up together. They're buddies. So he knows Nick Bosa very well. Now, Eric, you're nervous about Nick Bosa just breaking Tua in half. Well,
Eric Armstead and Fred Warner.
Here's McDaniel talking about Nick Bosa.
He lives and breathes pass rushing. He does, when I was around him in San Francisco, he would do pass rush moves on sanitizer, you know, like little pods. Like, if you see like an object, like this podium, he would do a pass rush move on it.
Isn't that you, Dawson, in the house where you're like putting
on
layups and stuff?
It's Eurostep. Every time I walk past somebody in my crib, it's a Eurostep I'm about to give them. I do this in the hallways right here. Every time I walk past Reggie, Eurostep, bro. Watch out.
We sat with karate moves when we were hosting with him in the night show. Like during breaks, he would just be fighting air.
Dude, yeah.
It was insane.
Oh, he's a kung fu guy.
Oh, yeah.
Colby Sapp will throw some roundhouse kicks here in the studio against air.
You know, and Tim Collins, down the hall here, part of management, I've long known him as the office ace. You can catch him going into a full windup. He was a college pitcher.
Yep.
You know?
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Now, everybody's got their own thing.
I teased this yesterday. Oh, yeah. Brian, what are you doing? You fighting air?
You making crawfish in the air?
No, I'll tell you what. No, kick slide. You know, my old offensive lineman techniques. Every once in a while, I'll show you. I'll kick slide away from you. Yeah.
I like that.
Get that separation.
Yeah. Unless the gout is acting up on
then I'm on IR. I'll tell you, the gout, I would wish that on nobody. Seriously.
Man, our poor guy was struggling.
Why do you bring that crap up, man? That thing hurt so bad.
It was bad.
You said kick slide, and I immediately went to, is that foot kick slideable?
No, I would have to.
If he has all the working
parts
anymore.
No, when I got gout, I can't kick slide worth a damn.
Oh, man.
You got King's disease. They call that King's disease out here. Yeah, you got gout.
It's brutal.
Eating
God,
too good?
Please.
Eating too, living too high in a hole.
And I tell you what, I wish that on nobody.
Testing.
Seriously, nobody.
It's actually a flex. If you have gout, it's kind of a flex.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It is not a flex.
Got this belly.
I can't even put a damn shoe on.
I done moved to Miami, got chubby. I got gout. I got this girl.
I got gout.
Yeah. Oh, damn right, I got gout.
It's amazing. Oh, man. I'm all the above.
Come and visit me.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since we've got to catch up with our Glizzy expert, Ari Temkin, but we might have a new Glizzy expert, T. Higgins, and he was trolling his guy, Jamar Chase, this weekend over on the sideline.
You're eating a glizzy with no Bev and no condiment on it. You're pitiful. Well, Jamar Chase eating a glizzy. He's a glizzy gobbler. Ah, I'm done, bro. I'm done. Oh, look at her, yeah. Oh, he got two glizzies.
And then Jamar Chase just gets up and walks off in pure embarrassment.
So he's injured, he's sitting on the sidelines, and he's just pulling out random foil-wrapped hot dogs out of his hoodie.
Yes.
That's special.
That's exactly what he's doing. And Tegan's like, well, you're eating these things dry and plain.
He said no Bev, like no beverage, no drink.
Yeah.
I like the way
Can't
he shortened
forget
that
the Bev,
there.
Never.
Kids shorten everything, man.
Absolutely.
The dry hot dog is a tough one, man. I mean, if you're hungry enough, of course you're going to do it. There's no question. But gosh, can a man get a little mustard?
Maybe they didn't have the packs in the locker room for him. You know, he had to just kind of just go for it.
That's the Nerlens Noel move, right?
Yeah.
Broadus, as you're rocking your Mavericks shirt right
it
now,
it's
the Nerlens Noel situation.
Yeah. Proud about the Mavs.
But wasn't Nerlens Noel like active in that game though? Like he was actually playing?
He was playing.
Jamar Chase was injured.
So you get a pass. It's like no big deal.
It was Mark Sanchez with the Jets.
Mark Sanchez was actually playing. Yes.
He needed
like,
a little dog.
Can you get me something? And like one of the equipment guys brought him a hot dog.
Still not as legendary as Andre Iguodala on the 73-win Warriors team, knowing exactly when the Supreme Nachos go away from the concession stands, like at the 2-minute mark of the third quarter, and he would find a way to dial them up right before the fourth quarter.
It's our
when,
guy.
Of course, the Warriors were
Man,
up
you
by
you get
like
hungry on the field a lot.
Hell yeah.
You get hungry a
2-4
lot.
Now I want a hot dog.
Yeah.
There
hot
it is.
Dogs are great.
Thank you, Will Chuck.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Will Chuck.
When we return here in the G-Bag Nation, it's time to talk with a legendary play-by-play man, one of our favorites here in the nation, the great Kevin Harlan, who was calling NBA last night, has called several Cowboy games already this year. We'll talk DFW sports with one of the greats coming up next year. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. All right, welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. I hope you're having a great day. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we're going to be joined by TCU play-by-play voice Brian Estridge and talk about everything going on now that they're 3 in the college football playoff. But we have another special guest joining us right now, one of our favorites. Here we go.
Sets, fires, scores! Curry with a three. Good! He doesn't stop. He relocates and gets the three. Doncic doubled. Hardaway, three. That will go down! Curry wants to go at Doncic. That's the matchup they want.
The bump and the fadeaway. Doncic, 41 points.
Great call last night. Kevin Harlan, voice of the NBA on TNT and the NFL and college basketball on CBS. And Kevin, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Oh, thanks for the invite. Good to hear you guys. And being in Dallas last night, that was a great crowd. And I every time I come away watching Doncic with my own eyes, I just shake my head and can't believe I'm seeing someone so good. So he young is, and so yeah. good, man. He is something else.
It is special, and we try to appreciate it as much as we can. When you get a guy like this, you never know when you're going to have another one like that. What do you think about the team overall? We had you on during the playoffs and their great run, and it looked like the era was pointing up. But what do you think of them right now?
Well, they're ahead of schedule last year for sure. I don't think anybody saw that coming, but sure enough, they turned the corner and they got in late and they made their way through. And that was a terrific experience for that team to go through that. And at one time last year, they were 16-18, and now they're back to .500. So I say, let's just let these couple months kind of get coaches familiar with what they've got. Even though it says the same name in the back of the uniform, these are different teams. Players age a year. They have different things that happen in the off season. They grow in ways that you know, now they've got to change this or work on that. It's a process. And in the NBA, with so many games and injuries and getting used to the everyday of it, it takes a while, I think, for a coach to figure out what they've got. Now, we're about 20 games in, give or take, around the league, and this is about the time the coaches have a pretty good handle on what they can do, the kind of rotations they can use, and how they can go to their bench, and how long they got to play their starters, and who needs a break, and who they got to, you know, kind of get on, and who's got to push the gas, and everything else. And I guess I would just say, you know, it's listen, the defending champion is not doing all that hot. They're about 500 too. So let's, I say let's get past the first of the year, and when these teams, and now that Dallas has breathed that rarefied playoff air of conference finals, let's give them a chance to see maybe a light at the end of the tunnel. They know what's coming around the bend. There's probably a little pacing of themselves right now. They got veterans on that team that have played. You know, Dinwiddie's played a while, and Bullock has played, and Hardaway. These guys have played a lot of seasons in the league. They know what's ahead of them, and I think I wouldn't say they're not exerting. I wouldn't say they're not pushing it to the limit. I just think that they know it's a long season, and right now they want to be right in every facet of them individually. As Kidd works on getting the rotation, you know, without Brunson, that left a big hole, and it's just going to take some time to kind of get this thing plastered up, but it will, and they'll be there like we all expect them to be.
Kevin, you made note of this during the broadcast last night, but my goodness, have you guys ever seen more travel calls in your life during a basketball game? And as Mavs fans, thank goodness they called that last one on Steph Curry.
Well, yeah, right. Wasn't that something? And that was a travel. That was clearly a violation. I just think that the officials get points of emphasis at various times of a year, especially to begin the season. And one of the points, again, this year is the traveling. I think they're because if you don't get a handle on it, these players are so gifted that they're going to push the limits and come up with things, whether it's the Euro step or the Harden fake and the lean and all these different things that are going on. Here in the last couple games, I've noticed, you know, I thought we were getting away from leaning into or having, you know, kind of that moment where the guy falls into you and like seducing him to collapse into your shot as you come down. But now they're kind of allowing some of that, and they're calling the defender more than they did, I think, at times last year. So it goes in waves, and it kind of goes in different phases. And we may be in that phase right now where they know that these players, as geniuses as they are, figuring out new ways to move and be deceptive and come up with fakes that no one has seen, and they do it. They're smart. They've got to begin at the very roots of it, and that means the proper number of dribbles and steps and plants and pivots and everything else, and that traveling violation has got to be enforced, and they're not backing away. They're going to stay on it. We saw a lot last night, and I think we're going to continue to.
What's been the NBA storyline that's intrigued you the most? There's been so many with the Lakers, with what they're doing. A lot of people counting out the Suns in the West. They've been dominant. Boston being outstanding. So many great storylines just to start this season.
I guess you know, New Orleans has got probably as good an offensive team as we've seen, and they're in the division. And I think that Morant has added to his game in Memphis. And we thought that the big experiment in Minnesota would be one that would be transformative, like it was when Sampson and the great players of the past, the Twin Towers, got together. And even when there was a Robinson and Duncan unison in San Antonio. And so the Minnesota thing has been very slow to get off the ground. And now Carl Anthony Towns is out about a month and a half with an injury. So we don't know where that's going to go. I shouldn't be surprised, but this Laker thing, I just can't get out of my head how they thought that with the lack of shooting, that thing was going to work with those two Hall of Famers and their history of injuries and the age on both of them. I just didn't know where they thought that was going to go, and they're still trying to work through it clearly. And we're just we're just 20 games into the season, so we've got a long way to go. We're a quarter of the way in, but the early numbers there obviously are not very good. Portland's better than I thought they'd be. I was stunned that Utah came out of the blocks as fast as they did. Now they've kind of leveled off a little bit. Doncic to me looks better. He looks not only in his skill set. I think that the games this past summer helped him again, as they always do with the young player. But this time, he came in better shape. In fact, I mentioned it last night on the air. His body looks different last night than it did November 30th of last year, or November 29th of last year. He looks better. And you know, every year these guys are in the league, they find new ways for eating, nutrition, sleeping, working, all this stuff. And he's 23. So it's an accumulation of all these experiences and people that, you know, and maturity and everything else that kind of comes into the fold. And with him, he looks as confident. The one thing I think he is backing off on a little bit, although a couple times he was irritated, getting on these officials. That is not serving a purpose. They're ticked off. They don't want to see it. They get tired of it. I think sometimes that inadvertently they take it out on the Mavericks, and that he has got to stop this yelping at these officials. They do not want to hear it, even though he's as good a player as this game has right now, one of the top three or four players in the game. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to see it. But he does look like he is trending the other way, and that is a good sign. I think Jason has worked with him on that a lot too.
Kevin, one of the great things about having you on is that you can also talk NFL with the best of them. And I know that you've done some games with some of these NFC East opponents for the Cowboys. How would you handicap what you've seen from the Commanders, the Eagles, the Giants, and the Cowboys as well? How would you handicap the NFC East right now?
Washington is better than they appear, and they've been playing great. Giants don't seem to me to have the depth to be as good as the record says they are. I think Philadelphia, they're going through some injuries right now, and they've got to work through some of that, but all teams do. So that, you know, that's just part of the world of the NFL. Hurts is better than I ever thought he'd be. I got to be honest. I just did not see this coming. I didn't think he had as much variety to his game as he has shown. His arm is better. His reads are better. He's smart not to get hit. He's got command of the locker room. He can make judgments quickly and change in the blink of an eye at the line of scrimmage or even during a play. I think they've got the right voices in their head with Sirianni and that staff. So I like Philadelphia. And I'm always bullish on the Cowboys. I like them for many reasons. They still may be the team that's going to host an NFC championship. I know that Philadelphia came out of the blocks so strong, but what they did to the Vikings, Mike looks like he's more confident. His body language, I think, is better. Of course, having Dak there makes a big difference. I think the team proved something to themselves when they had to change quarterbacks and Dak was gone for a while. And now that he's back, he's getting his rhythm with the team that we once saw. And I like him. I like him a lot. And I don't think we've seen their best yet. I think their best is yet to come. But I'm bullish on the Cowboys. The division is like the AFC East, isn't it? I mean, like all these teams are strong. Washington, though, to me, is kind of the X factor here. I think they're better than we ever thought they would be this season. And they're getting Young back, and he was supposed to come back last week. Supposedly he's coming back this week. That can only help that defense with those two big studs in the middle, man. Those guys are monsters on that defensive line. But I like Washington. I saw them beat Philadelphia the other night on Monday night, and they can run the ball. They believe in the quarterback. He makes things happen. I think they've made a great decision not to go to Wentz. And I think Washington might be that team that you just got to go that we're going to see is the X factor in that division. And I would not be surprised if all four get in. I really would. Green Bay faltering, I could see four teams in the division going in.
How much do you think the addition of an Odell Beckham Jr. would help our Dallas Cowboys?
You know, I got to be honest. I mean, of course, my mind, I'm thinking of Odell pre-injuries. You get those ACLs, man, those things, they take it out of you. And I'm not sure what happened this past weekend in Miami, but the optics were not good. And I don't know that that's deterred Jerry. I guess I heard him on some show yesterday or something. He said they're moving, you know, full steam ahead, and they've got that prerogative. And I don't think he would hurt him. I think he would bring another dimension. And every time he'd line up out there, you'd have to account for him. But that ACL stuff is serious business. And he did help the Rams last year. I thought he was a nice component. But they also had the best receiver in football and Cup. And so the attention that was on Beckham was not as great as he probably once saw. So it would be a new rule. He was probably, I guess he was number two last year at the Rams, and he got the touchdown in the Super Bowl and was a factor. And I think Stafford was really comfortable with him as another veteran in that core. If it's not too expensive, doesn't disrupt your locker room, keeps the rhythm you've got going. Mike's a good read on that stuff. Mike has a good handle on those things. I think I'd trust Mike's gut and what he thinks Beckham can do. And Mike will look at him, as you would anybody that's coming in on Tuesdays to work out, he'll look at him incredibly, you know, tough. Because right now, you know, you're sweeping the walkway and you're lighting the candles and you're getting ready for the postseason. And you don't want anybody coming in there and blowing out that candle and screwing up that walkway. And Beckham's a big personality and a big name. And that would be probably my only concern. If you're thinking you're getting Beckham with the Rams or Beckham with the Giants, I don't know that it's going to happen. He had a bad tenure in Cleveland where he was injured. He was injured with the knee in L.A., I just don't know physically what you're getting in about a year after it's happened, and that less than a year than it's happened with the knees. So there's a lot there to look at, certainly.
That's a great wise perspective. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. We love chatting sports with you. You're welcome on these airwaves anytime, buddy.
Thank you. I loved visiting your city last night. It was terrific. And that Doncic, I would pay and pay and pay and pay to watch him play. That guy, he is a generational talent. The league has never seen a player like him. With his size, his ability, his grace, he makes the hardest plays, you know, look so easy because it's the confidence in his rhythm, and he's got this elan about him. It's indescribable.
Yeah,
this kid, he is one of a kind, and I'm glad he's in a market like Dallas where they can appreciate him.
It's kind of like if you took Carmelo and LeBron and combined them and then took away the speed and the leaping ability.
Well, he's got skills that those other guys don't have. I got to be honest.
Okay.
I think he's a better shooter than Carmelo, and Carmelo is one of the top shooters in the history of the game. Yeah. But if he stays on this course, his shooting is better than Carmelo. And he's got stuff that some of his passes last night, he's 23. And you know, LeBron was known for his passing when he came in. So when he did that, but this kid, he's the whole package. He's the whole package. I've never seen a player like him. I said it when I saw Jordan, and LeBron is a one of a kind. And Kobe had a lot of those skills, but this kid, I've never seen a kid like this before.
And now he's playing defense.
And now he's attempting to give an effort, and that may be the one thing that will resonate with his teammates more than anything. Because if he's attempting to play, if he's putting effort on defense, that sends a signal that no words a coach can say or no offensive game can lead can give that other group of players on that team. They know he's so gifted with his offense, but if his defense and that effort, and it may never be great, but the effort is there. He's locked in. He's communicative. That sends as big a message as he could possibly send to the rest of the team. That is a huge step in the right direction. For what I saw last year at the same time to this year, and I did his Western Conference Finals, and I did his playoffs against Phoenix. I've never seen a player like him before, and I'm probably not using strong enough words to describe him.
Those are great words.
He's phenomenal. Yeah. Phenomenal.
Awesome job. I'm glad we kept you around for a few more minutes to expand on Luka there. We'll look forward to next time we can chat with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Happy holidays. Take care.
Salute to you. The great Kevin Harlan here on 105.3 The Fan. Yeah, that Jerry Jones was on some show yesterday, and he was talking about that. The texters love that. The texters love that potential dump button situation. And, of course, the sports wisdom and perspective flowing from the golden pipes of Kevin Harlan. We love it. Incredible. What do you want to do next, Giafalo?
We have a meth monk situation we got to address. That's next.
Thank you, Lucius. Yeah, Brian Estridge, voice of TCU, coming up at 4 o'clock. It's time now for Eric Giafalo and some fun stories.
Okay, so this was a pretty crazy one. I was not expecting this today whenever I was starting to do a little preparation for today's program. The bad boys of Buddhism is what this is what they have been deemed here. And it is, of course, the entire monk population at a Thai temple that had to be sent to rehab after all of them tested positive for meth. It was a bit jarring, almost as jarring as Jeff Saturday not calling a timeout in the final 90 seconds of the disaster on Monday Night Football.
Must have been the cleanest temple in all of Thailand.
Yeah, I imagine this place was a spotless. And this is coming from the New York Post. Shout out to them. And so let's head right to Bangkok and get the deets on this thing. Multiple Buddhist monks in Thailand shipped off to a rehab after they all tested positive for meth. The holy men, including the temple's abbot or head monk, failed the drug tests in their province's district on Monday. Quote, the temple is now empty of monks and nearby villagers are concerned they cannot do any merit making. So there's a trickle effect here because I guess the villagers that surround this temple have religious obligations to go bring like free food and stuff to the monks. And now
they've been turning it down.
Right. Yeah, <we're good.
laughs> That was the first sign.
So apparently this particular province of Thailand, which I'm assuming to be Bangkok, is starting to really crack down on drug use.
Yeah.
And so police forced the monks to undergo urine tests after they raided the temple as part of their crackdown on drugs. And so the monks who haven't been named at this point have since been sent to the health clinic to undergo drug rehabilitation. They were also booted from the monkhood in the wake of their positive tests, leaving their tiny temple without any religious leaders. So and here's one of the things that was a bit eye popping that was probably something that started to get them, like maybe them denying the free food was something that was like, OK, let's be on alert with these guys. Well, there was also a story a week ago that came kind of out of the blue, but now it's all starting to make sense. Just last week, a drug addled Buddhist monk was arrested for carjacking and leading police on a frantic chase through northern Thailand, resulting in this incredible quote, which reads this. He stole my gold Nissan Navara. I left it in the parking lot with the keys in. I was shocked, so I chased after him with another monk in a car for about 20 kilometers, but the monk was going too fast, like a race car.
Dude, they went full meth heads.
They went full.
They're stealing cars.
Yeah, and well,
they got to cook in something.
There's no, I mean, a Nissan Navara is the choice. I mean,
well,
wouldn't
I mean,
you go
not
for
a lot
something
of,
a little
you
bit
can't,
not
a lot of room,
you
but
can't help
you know, beggars
that's
can't
a tweaker
be
car.
Man, they're
classic tweaker car.
That's a good call, boys. Yeah. So, yeah, and
I'm just surprised the whole temple went in. Like, usually, like, a couple people from the social circle get into meth, and they get ostracized. Like, oh, my God, the meth heads are here.
But, see, I think this started from the top on down, because it's the leader who is also a part of this. So, I imagine it was like, okay,
you guys want enlightenment?
We're doing it right.
Here we go.
Here we go. Aaron Rodgers has his way. I have mine.
And don't say a bleeping word.
But,
who's selling to the monks?
Who's not, Brian?
They could turn it on maybe some of the villagers and use it as a religious ploy to be like, hey, this is going to be good for you. You give me what I need, I give you what you need. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
Monks helping monks.
There's not any like mug shots to go off of, so I don't know what the condition is of their faces and their teeth and stuff. I don't know like how long this has been going on, but long enough for the entire place to get popped. An official says the temple is now empty of monks and nearby villagers are concerned they cannot do any merit making. Merit making is the Buddhist practice, as we mentioned, of donating the food. And so now it is just all over the place. People are freaking out. Backup monks are being sent to the temple so villagers can practice their religious obligations. So they're making a call to the bullpen and they're bringing in a litany of backup JV, you know, B team monks to take over for the A team, who of course was riding high on the meth.
Backup monks.
Is that not the most, one of the most, I mean, this is about as crazy as the meth monkeys in Bangkok from 2 years ago, I believe.
I want to hear Jason Garrett take that Buddhist monk story and make something of it, an inspirational message for his team.
Meths on monk is a lot like life.
Goodness me.
Yeah. Let me tell you how.
Thanks, Chia Follow. Yep. He'll be back with more goodness coming up a little bit later on. TCU play-by-play voice Brian Estridge joins you next right here. It's the G-Bag Nation and the Fan.